This is 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. Welcome to the Electric Drum. I'm Jose Candelario, your host this evening, and I am speaking with educator teacher Mr. Dejon Jett from Troop School here in New Haven, who just got an award from Curriculum Associates.
The Extraordinary Educators Award. So Curriculum Associates is our the publishers of iReady, which is our math curriculum. So I teach sixth grade math. And through that, they look at my data, they look at the growth that I've had with my students, the resources that I use in the class. And from that, and a bunch of other information on the application, they, you know, they checked off some box, or I checked off some boxes, and I guess I, you know, or I know that now I'm an extraordinary educator. So
now iReady, so they're looking for, describe what are they looking for in the math classroom.
So they're looking for, there's a couple of different components. So they ask you, the application was kind of long. I was actually almost not going to submit it. But they're looking at the resources that you use. So if you're using like Ready Classroom, if you're using different pieces to the overall math classroom. So if you're, you know, using the different tools like the Try, Discuss, Connect, you're using small group instruction, you're reaching your students, you're using other resources, you're making learning fun, it's hands-on, kids are engaged in discourse, so they're conversing about math. And so you talk all about that, and then they want to know what growth you've had. So you talk about your growth. And I guess I checked off the boxes to be considered an extraordinary educator.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Let's go back into your history. Where are you from?
So I was born in New Haven. So I lived in the Hill briefly, maybe till like first, second grade. And then we moved to Hamden, and I spent most of my, all of my, you know, K-12 years in Hamden schools.
And you went off to college?
Yep. So I went to college. I initially started at Tennessee State University, and then came back home. I finished up at Albertus with a bachelor's in finance. And then I knew that I did not want to do that. I always wanted to be a teacher. And so I went back to Quinnipiac. And so I finished with my master's in teaching. And then I realized I think I could have a bigger impact outside of the classroom. And so I decided to go back for my leadership degree. So I'm currently at the University of Bridgeport for my administration and supervision 6-year certificate, which will allow me to basically have a bigger impact on kids within the school building, being in a leadership role.
How difficult was it in going through the education system here in Connecticut growing up? I don't think it was the easiest.
You know, it was, I think I didn't realize the challenges until I got to high school. So maybe I could have been a little sheltered K-8. When I got to high school was when I started seeing the challenges, I would say. So like initially I had said that I always wanted to be a teacher, but I majored in finance. I had a guidance counselor tell me, like, you're never going to be a teacher. That's not a dream that you need to have. You need to go into business. That's where you have a job. They don't need male teachers. That's not a thing. You need to, you know, go in business, major in accounting. That's what you need to do. And so listening to the guidance counselor, I was like, okay. And, you know, I was never really invested in that because that's not what I wanted to do. So it took me a long time to finish. And when I finished, I'm like, I hate this. Like, I hate my job. I hate what I'm doing. I don't want to do this. And my mom told me, she was like, you know what you got to do. You got to go back. You got to figure out how you're going to become a teacher. She was like, because, you know, if you're doing what you love, it'll never feel like you're working. And every day in my other, you know, career, it felt like I was working every day, all day. And I was like, this got to end. And so I went back. I happened to see Quinnipiac on like an online. And even then I was still doubting myself. I'm like, I can't even, there's no way I'm going to make it into Quinnipiac. And, so I was just, that was like, I'll just apply just to see. But at that point I had given up. I was like, I'm not going to make it. You know, it's never going to be a thing. And then within like a week or so, they wrote me and were like, we're taking you in. And then it's been uphill ever since.
So when you got through high school, mm-hmm. you were able to go out of state.
Yes.
How beneficial is it to take a step outside of this environment?
it was extremely beneficial, especially being able to go to an HBCU. I think that was that 1 year that I did was truly an extraordinary experience. That was the, to be honest, before I went to Quinnipiac, that was the only time that I felt like school was home for me, being at an HBCU, surrounded by people like me that were most going, especially if you were out of school, out of state student, you were going through the same experiences as I was with financial aid. And just to relate on levels that I had never been able to relate on with anyone else in school. That HBCU experience changed my outlook and really that was the highlight of me knowing this is why I need to be a teacher. I need to give to kids what this school has given to me, which is feeling like you belong in a space of academia. Like you belong in this type of environment, and you can learn in this type of environment. And granted, I only did a year there because of other family issues, but it was life changing. And you know, I always say I'm done after this degree, but one of my goals is to have a degree from an HBCU because it's truly an experience like no other. And I only had 1 year of it, and it was truly life changing.
You came back due to circumstances. How mm-hmm. hard was it for you to not perceive yourself as a failure or that you had failed at that time?
Oh, it was extremely hard. Coming back, I knew that I failed. I was like, and I think I took a year off or it might have been a semester off. And I had told myself, I'm like, I failed. Like everyone was rooting for me. You know, I had all this stuff. They had gone all out. My mom had a graduation party for me. So I had all this stuff. And to come home after a year was like, you failed and you're never going to make it. And so I probably cycled through some depression about, you know, not ever going to make it out of here. And because for so long, I'm like, I don't want to be at that time. I didn't see Connecticut as my home. I wanted to branch out and have my own and do my own thing. And it took me some time. And it also, you know, and then I was in a major that I didn't want to do, you know, so I had to think about, you know, do I continue going forward or do I start all over? You know, how easy is it for me? Do I waste that 1 year's worth of money? Because my mom paid out of pocket for my school. And half of it. So Yale paid half. My mom paid the other half because she was, she was employed at Yale. And then other than that, you know, just, it took some time to really just say like, you know, you belong in this space and you're not a failure. But you know, every May was depressing when it wasn't my turn to graduate. It was like, see, this is what, you know, if you would have stayed, this is what you could have been, you know? And I would probably like delete all social media around like April and get it back around August because I just didn't want to see anyone where I felt like that was where I deserved to be. And until 2016, I re-enrolled and decided to finish. And then that was when it was like all uphill since. It was like I finished, then Quinnipiac, it was right after that. And now I've been in school, it feels like, for 100 years. It just keeps going and I keep saying I'm done and then I think of something else. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna do this too.
What do you see right now in reflection? What reflects in your students to you?
The big piece that I think is not knowing how to pay for it. I think families, they see these numbers and they're immediately alarmed by, you know, $25,000. When you can't even see yourself putting out $1,000 to see $25,000 or $30,000 or depending on where you're looking at, you know, it's Tennessee State. I think at the time we were looking at $24,000 and that's alarming. And so I think because people, they hear all this student loan debt and what I'm going to have to pay afterwards and I'm not going to be making the money to pay that, people are immediately turned away from that. Also, given the climate of social media, you know, people see that you don't necessarily need the four-year degree to make it. And so then people are not as invested in their education because they see the one in a million making it. And at the end of it all, whether you're a social media star or, you know, content creator, whatever it is, all these TikTok stars, you need to have some foundational, like, educational skills to be able to know if someone's ripping you off or not, you know? And so I think the big piece is just not seeing the worth or the benefit, but also not knowing the resources out there. There are tons of people and organizations programs to be able to offset a lot of those costs. But I think a big piece of it is just not knowing the resources, not doing the work. You know, if something's not handed, it's like, all right, we can't make it. We can't make it happen. So we're not doing that. And it's truly just knowing your resources is probably a big barrier.
You are listening to The Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario, and today, right now, I'm talking to an extraordinary educator, as awarded, Mr. Dejon Jett of Troop School, educator. What in your classroom keeps their focus?
Well, you know, I run a tight ship. And so early on, I've realized kids will do anything for you if they trust you, they respect you, they love you, and they know the same is reciprocated. So I do the bulk of that work the first couple weeks of school. So getting to know the kids, building those relationships, building the trust. So then when it's time to do the real work, I don't necessarily see a lot of the problems that some other people may see. The kids now, they will learn when they feel like they can trust you. You know, it's not to say that they don't want to learn any other time, but they want to know the same love they have at home is the same love they're going to get in the classroom. The same trust that they have with their families at home is the same trust that they're going to get in the classroom. And in order for you to show that to them, you have to do the work. And so, you know, I look at my school, I do the work of, you know, I make sure families are included. I talk to kids about things that are important to them. I try to make the learning relevant to what they're doing. And then just being a constant smiling face. I think it also helps that I look like many of them, you know. I now have braids, you know, so it kind of like kids are like, oh, Mr. Jett, you know, who does your hair now? So now we, you know, it almost is like, oh, he really does look like us. He really is one of us. but I think, and I think that plays a big part, the fact that they could probably see me in them. And so, you know, social media, while outside of my classroom, it is big. In my classroom, they know, you know, we leave all that at the door. And so it's a different ball game when they walk into room 310 versus when they're going into any other room.
Now, do you really see there's no such thing as a bad kid?
Oh, 10 times. I mean, the ones that the students that have been written off. When people ask me about them, I'm like, I didn't have those issues. And so sometimes people are like, well, he's not the best person to get real information because the kids don't. You know, they don't do that in there. And you ask, you know, we've had some challenging kids at Troop. And I'm like, well, they're fine with me. You know, it's kids just, you have to, and kids can feel when you're truly there for them. And, you know, it's evident by the amount of kids that come to my room every day to say hi or just to sit and have lunch with me. I mean, they're having lunch and they're just, you know, they're just sitting there. But I think the big piece is really their relationship. They have to know that you truly care. And I think, not to say that there are teachers that don't, but when they come in my room, they know that it's genuine love and respect. And, you know, I teach sixth grade. So at that age, they think they know the world. And while I know they don't, I do give them the space to feel like they know it. And then it's like, well, you know, you really shouldn't have did that. You know, and so then because they have the love and the trust for me and the respect for me, they could hear it versus if it's someone who hasn't done the work to build that in and they're telling them the same thing I'm telling them. And they're like, well, you don't know what you're talking about. And they walk away and then they come to me and I tell them the same thing. And they're like, oh, well, Mr. Jett, and I, you know, you give them the space, they want to be heard.
you know, but then also know, okay, well, what you did was a little wrong. You know, you got to go back and apologize. You got to fix that. So it's not to say that everything is, 100% perfect, but giving them the space to know that their voice is heard, but also, you know, building that trust so they know when I do speak and I do tell them something, it's coming from a place of love and really wanting the best outcome for them, you know? So that's a big piece to it.
You've taken on an extra credit teaching life skills.
Yeah. Without even knowing it, you know, it was just, again, when I think about what I didn't have growing up, I had one teacher that was Black. And I remember for the first time being in her classroom, feeling like she just got what I, you know, if I came in upset, she just understood, like, you know, just take some time versus other teachers, when you weren't responding, it was like, well, they're not doing their work. They're not doing it. It's like, well, maybe I'm just going through something, and kids can go through things, you know? But when I think about like that, I am, and I think I'm just being the educator that I wish I had in my, you know, K-12 years. Being the educator that I feel like kids need. They need to feel safe at school too, you know, and given everything going on, you know, I just was telling someone this the other day, kids have love at home. They also want to be loved in school too, you know? And so I always take away that stigma that, you know, they only want to talk here because they don't talk at home. That's not the case. They want to be loved here just like they're loved at home. It may just look a little different, you know.
Who was that teacher that did it for you?
Two teachers, I would say Mrs. Reardon and Miss Wade. Miss Wade I had was sixth grade. She was my first Black teacher. And she just, like I said, she just got me. But Miss Reardon was the one. She also cultivated an environment of like trust and love and caring and really took the time to get to know her kids. And so she knew, I could remember, and I had her in fourth grade, and I knew when I walked in, if I wasn't smiling, you know, she didn't point it out to everyone, but she would say, you know, you good? Everything okay? You know, privately, or she'll, you know, throw me a piece of, give me a piece of candy or something like that to just say, take your time, you know, walk by, you know, you take a minute if you need it. And I think that's really what kids need to, they need to know that they have that safe space in school, you know?
You mentioned your mother a lot.
Yes. She's my world.
How important was education for her?
She went to, she was like a business school after high school. And so she landed a good job at Yale. And she told me, she said, I know what you want to be. So I'm going to push you. And so she said, you know, there were times in high school where I was like, I'm tired. I don't want to do it. She was like, you got to know the goal. You know your goal. You got to make it there. And so while some people were saying, you know, you just got to make it out of high school, my mom's whole thing was you got to make it to be a certified teacher. You got to make it to that point. And so in every which way she could help me, she did it. I would not be here without her. You know, when I was first told her I was going back to grad school and I had to quit my job, she was like, come back home. You know, when I was going through the graduate program and teachers aren't making money and we have to, you know, leave our jobs to do this internship, my mom said, I got whatever you had to pay, I got it. You just come on home, I will make it happen. And my mom did that for me. And then, you know, now transitioning into education, the money that I was making, I'm no longer making. So we're talking probably a 50% reduction in pay. And if I'm ever in need, sometimes my mom will know, because I'm also never going to ask. Sometimes I'll get a Zelle and I'm like, okay, I guess she knew, you know, she knows, or she's like, oh, no, I just want to make sure, you know, yeah. And, but then also just being there when, you know, my mom was, she truly was just, she is the best thing in my life. And so I can't thank her enough for, you know, just giving me the space to be me and to pursue my dreams and not, you know, tell me that it's a long shot,
you know, even, you know, I remember when I kept failing one of the certification tests and I was like, I keep wasting my money. And so she sent me the money for two tests. She was like, well, here's it just in case you fail it again. And, you know, luckily I passed on that fourth time. But I remember her, she was like, we're not letting this go. We came too far. And it was always we, it was never you. It was she and I, and that's, I spoke at my Quinnipiac graduation. I was a student keynote, like commencement speaker. And I remember at the end, I think I said like and it was on Mother's Day too. And I was like, this degree is for us. Every degree I get is for me and my mom to make us, to get us to a higher position.
That's very emotional for me to even listen right now. Can you speak a little bit about teachers' pays and, you know, and what would you like to see?
You know, I think when you think of all the demands and all the different tasks that educators are doing all across the board, you know, while the certified teacher pay is low, so is the paraeducators, who are really the backbone of our classroom, of many of the classrooms, especially in the younger grades. And some of the paraeducators or paraprofessionals, they're not even making a wage that sets them above the poverty line. And so, you know, that alone speaks to the needed change, the change that needs to take place. As a certified teacher with a master's degree, you know, at step four or five, I think we're just in New Haven, we're just hitting 52,000. And that's not anything. I don't know. And so I work another job to be able to pour into my classroom, to be able to pour back into my students, whatever is not provided from, you know, the district. And, you know, it's to no fault of theirs, you know, the school district, but, you know, the pay is a factor in it, but I think you really have to love what you do. You know, you're not coming into teaching or education to make money. You know that you're doing the Lord's work, and you know it's not going to come with a big price tag of, you know, of benefits. But I think the biggest benefit aside from the pay is knowing that you changed the trajectory of a kid's life, and to me that's worth more than the pay. So while I know the pay is low, or not what it should be, when you think about like an educated professional with a master's or even further, you know, teachers are usually the most educated people in the room, yet we're the lowest paid people. And, you know, that it does make things a little difficult, but, you know, like I said, I'm fortunate to have family. When I reach out with a need, my family rallies around me. And, you know, it's like, if I need this, we had a fundraiser for school. I know I could send it to my cousins. I got about 980 of them. I could send it to them, and I know they're going to jump in and help my kids. Or I needed some books when I first, you know, got to troop. And I'm like, I need books that, you know, books that are talking about things that they're going through, or by authors that are like them. I send it to my friends. They're sending my Amazon wish list, or they're Zelling money, like, go buy this book, or they're sending me stuff. So while the pay is low, I think you also need a village around you to help offset some of those costs, because, you know, we can't do it alone. You know, just like we're teaching, it takes a village to raise that child. Being an educator, it takes a village to keep on pouring into kids.
What kind of advice can you give to a parent right now?
The best thing I could say is show up to the school. Show up. You know, I'm fortunate to be at a school where my principal is all about, you know, families coming into the building and really being a part of their child's life. But I would say, if you're unsure of something, show up to the building, ask questions. We're fortunate enough at Troop, we have a family resource center. We have a school-based health clinic. So, you know, you can receive dental services in there. You could receive counseling services, medical services, all types of things. But if you never show up to the school building, you never know the resources that are there, and who these people know
to put you in a better position to serve your family and your students. So the number one stop I would say is go to the school. Talk to your child's teacher. If you're not getting anywhere with the teacher, reach out to administration. How can I be involved in this way? You know, I work 11 to 8. What can I do to help out there? Because it's not always about, you know, coming every day and showing up every day. There are other ways to be an active and vital member or part to your child's education. But you'll never know if you don't reach out. You know, sometimes we just need people to make flyers, and that might be something you're good at. Graphic design. You might be good at graphic design, or you might, you know, be good at, you know, setting up events. You might have a partnership. While you can't make it, you might know somebody in the community. And that happened to me recently. I was talking to a parent and she was like, actually, I know this person. She was like, I'll give him a call. And then the person reached out, you know, and now we're potentially setting up some fun stuff for our kids. But if they never would have reached out, I never would have known who they knew, and they never would have known what I needed from the school's perspective, you know. So just reach out to your child's school, and you know, let them know the ways in which you're available to help, and then show up. Be committed. Don't make commitments that are unrealistic to you because you feel like the school needs that. They want honest communication, which is what we stress to our kids. We want you to be honest. So be honest. This is the ways that I can help out. This is what I can bring. And then you find a happy medium between that. You know, we don't want you to feel like you have to come every single day. We love it. Like I tell parents all the time, you don't even have to call. You know, you just show up. The clerk will call, Mr. Jed, I got such and such. Send them up. You're going to get what you're going to get. So send them up, you know. But I think that the number one hard start would be call the school, show up at the school, you know, reach out to the school, and they'll guide the way. You know, there are people in positions that will help guide you and get you in whatever way they can.
Very, very good. Thank you so much for your time. Final word as an educator.
It's challenging, but it's amazing work. And I think I have the best job, best career in the world, because I get to spend it with children who in turn will shape the world based on my interactions or the love they have for me. So to me, it's relationships.
Thank you very much for your time, Mr. Dejon Jett, educator, extraordinary educator by Curriculum Associates. And then he teaches at Troop. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
This has been the Electric Drum. I'm Jose Candelario. And like always, thank you for your listen here on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city.